Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The NBA and college basketball are back. The NFL and college football playoffs are right around the corner. With all these sports going on, there are plenty of bets to lock in, so if you're thinking about picking the Lakers to repeat their NBA championship or someone to upset Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs, you need to go to betonline.ag. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. And there's always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to a holiday version, a New Year's version of Bill Roden on Sports. I feel so blessed to be here with everybody. I'm here at an undisclosed location still, upstate New York. Here with my co-host and friend, the great Jamal Murphy. Murph, how you doing, man? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Bill. You know, it's going to be a nice little in-house party, I guess, with only the family, coronavirus style. So, you know, Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah. And here, of course, with our occasional third co-host, third guard, the great Steve Wilson.
Hey, Bill. Man, good to see everybody, and Happy New Year to everyone. And 2021 has just got to be better. 2020. Gots to be.
And of course, here with the judge, our friend the judge, looking forward to when he officially retires, he could join us. We'll have like a quartet. We just call him the judge. Welcome to the show. Hey, again, Bill. Once again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on here with you guys. I feel like I'm really doing something in tall cotton here with a great art performing artist like Steve. I've heard his work before, and not only that, I've heard him as a co-host on the show, and he's as good a musician as he is knowledgeable about sports. He's a hell of a musician, that's all I can say. And I was saying to Jamal, in the last couple of weeks with time off from work, I was able to listen to a couple of the versions of Up Next, and some great listening regarding Leonard Hamilton. Yes. And Ian Begley.
Thank you for the plug.
Really enjoyed those. Yeah. Immensely. And I got to say something about my boy, Bill Roden. I am reading yesterday the great John Thompson's book posthumously, reading it and enjoying it yesterday. And Big John writes in his book that he knew he arrived as a national sports figure when Bill Roden, Mike Wilbon, and Ralph Wiley started showing up at his games. That's when he knew. That's that great. He had arrived. He said something very important, though. I should have actually read it straight from the book, but he said that he realizes that his appearance in the sports world in college basketball helped Bill, helped Mike, helped Ralph Wiley. But he said, most important, he knows those three guys would have been great successes without him. But he felt that they were good for each other. And but I had to laugh when I read that Big John saying, I knew I arrived when Bill Roden and Mike Wilbon showed up.
And thanks for that plug. But the reality is that John Thompson really, really helped make my career. I mean, he really did. I mean, he's being very modest. Because of him, because of John Thompson, you know, the white sports editor were afraid of him. You know, they were afraid of the whole Georgetown thing. And so if you had a black person on your staff, They said, man, you go and decode this guy because, you know. And so really, that is really why me and Mike, Ralph Wiley, the late Brian Burwell, you know, he really helped make our career. Because I remember right. there was one press conference where I came in. I wasn't late, but I was standing off to the side. And John had just wanted to remember, you know, all you guys remember during that time with Ewing and Reggie Williams and Wingate. And I mean, they had maybe one of the best teams for 4 years in the country, right? And John, they are all black, right. and they were just like, man. And so, and everybody was afraid of John, Big John. And I was standing on the side during post game, and he said something, and I may have asked a question. Then he said, yeah, Roden over there is so and so and so, and he chuckled. And I had the presence of mind to, instead of being scared, to kind of respond to him. I joked back with him. I said, well, you know, maybe that's what you say, you know. And everybody was just like, damn, that was like, that would be like in the you say there's a brother in the deep South, two brothers fighting each other in the deep South, in like Mississippi, and then this white girl steps into the ring to say to the brother, and the brother turns around, slaps her. And the opponent just immediately runs away. He said, wait a minute, this brother's that bad to slap this white chick and then get away with it. And that's how I felt when I teased John back. And what that did for me, it raised my stature. Because it said, oh, Roden kind of has some kind. And it's what Bobby Knight and Shashet did to the white boys all the time. Right. They had a knowledge like Woj, and that, you know, and it lets everybody know that, oh yeah, this guy is in Knight's inner circle or something.
Yeah, he's cool. This one's cool over here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so for Thompson to do that with me and to Wilbon, he would call out, you know, he'd say, and Wilbon over there and something like that. And so in his book, it really, I guess the flip was that I knew I had arrived. As a national joke, when he acknowledged me like that, when somebody at that stature acknowledged me. So I will be forever grateful to Big John on so many levels. Man, we shared the same birthday, the same September 2nd birthday, and I would always like call or leave a note. And just another quick story. So one day, but you know, remember he had who's Michael Graham? Remember he had Michael Graham on that team, a freshman who Graham. Really helped him win that national championship, right? So the next year, there was something happened, and Michael was out. Anyway, he found himself on Georgetown campus trying to go to summer school, right? And I wanted to find him, you know, I wanted to talk to him, and you know, Georgetown ran that thing like organized crime. I mean, you couldn't. They won't give you permission. So, of course, me being the journalist, I found out where Michael was. I found the dorm and the room and went there, and he wasn't there. So I slid a note under his door saying, hey, call me when you get a chance. Well, of course, he went right to Coach Thompson. So when I called Coach Thompson to wish him happy birthday, he said, yeah, motherfucker, you know. I expect more from you than to, you know, try to get my guy. But we had an interesting discussion because my point was like, you know, I don't have to ask you permission to do my job. And there was this kind of silence.
Right.
And I think there was silence. What did he say, though? Because, again, but, you know, because it was like, and that was the beauty of our relationship. Me, him, Leonard Hamilton, all those guys, because, you know, our ritual, every Final Four, me, Nolan Richardson, John Chaney, Wilbon, Burwell, Ralph, we would all meet in a cafe at the Final Four. And we would talk till maybe 2 or 3 in the morning.
Wow.
About just issues, but it's all off the record. And eventually, every year after that, it got bigger and bigger and bigger until that became one of the most looked forward to things of the Final Four. And people would call me, man, where are we going to meet? And the interesting thing is that we never knew until we got to the Final Four. It was like the Underground Railroad, you know. And I see, says, where are we going to meet? We have like sheep, meet so-and-so and so-and-so, you know. And honestly, that's when I first realized Whitlock was who Whitlock was, which was not necessarily being fucked up, but that Whitlock would, you know, we'd all collect some money because we wanted to have like some chicken wings or something at the thing. And Whitlock would always give like a donation, but he would never come. He would never come. He would always give money, but never come because he wasn't a group guy and all that kind of stuff. So there's an extent to which Whitlock has been very consistent, whether you think he's fucked up or not, which a lot of black people do, you know, but he's been consistent like that. So, yeah, just to end this part of the conversation, I'm glad you read that part because John, man, played such a important role in my career. And even that moment when I told him that, you know, I don't have to ask your permission to do my job. I probably didn't say it like that, but it was letting him know that, you know, I understand the boundaries that we can get on the phone. We could conspire to get more black coaches in. We can meet. But I know that you know that I know that, you know, it's like being at the zoo where you go to the zoo and you have all these great animals there, the black panther, the tigers, the bear, but there's a reason them damn bars are there, you know, and you go behind those bars at your peril, you know. And so that has always been my approach to this stuff is that there's mutual respect, particularly when it comes to black people, but I'm still a journalist. And so even to this day, man, I'll talk to Leonard Hamilton to this day. And I talk to somebody else, and they'll talk to Roden, I don't ever want to hear this shit now. Because they instinctively know that writers, we're addicted to the story. And we'll sell out everybody we know for the story. And somebody has to remind them, say, listen, no, that's off the no. And you'd be like, oh, man, no. Yeah. And you know that if you betray a trust, it's over. So, no, man. But thanks for re-bringing that up because John was really critically important to all of our careers.
Right. And another major loss in 2020, for sure.
Yeah. What do you guys, Jamal, you sent a really nice note. So I'm curious, you know, as we go to this panel, 2020, I mean, we can speak generally, it's awful, but each of you, I'm just curious, what were your major, major events of 2021? You got Kobe, Coronas, POTUS 45, Kamala, George Floyd, the boycott, Black Lives Matter, the bubble, black coaches, Mahomes, yeah, the black quarterback, Naomi Osaka, LeBron James. I mean, so what do you guys think? What was sort of your big, you know, moment?
We'll start with you, Steve, since you're leaving us early.
Yeah, and actually, I've been given permission to extend my stay.
Okay. So, that's even better then.
I pulled some strings. No, but wow. Man, where do you begin? You know, I'll be 60 years old in February. And I can say I've never seen experienced a year like this. I mean, just on everything that you just mentioned, everything that's happened, you know, in the United States and in the course of the world with COVID and culturally. And I recently lost my mother. So that too.
Sorry to do that.
Thank you.
Our condolences. Yeah.
Thank you very much. But certainly just all in all, I even with that aside, I've never have seen all of these just major shifts and major events. Just, you know, it's mind boggling. It's just to wrap your head around everything. But I think this is, you know, to be somewhat mystic about it, I guess, or spiritual about it, is I think this is the universe saying, okay, well, it's time for a transition, you know, because certainly every period, you know, somewhere on the planet, we go through some kind of major cultural shift and cultural change, a big impact. And, you know, when you think about it, America has not seen war on our shores since the Civil War. You know, so, you know, we've gone through World War One, World War Two, but, you know, we're seeing, I think, a reckoning. We're all experiencing a reckoning of some sort, and we're due for it. We were due for it. You know, it's sad that it had to come by way of COVID because of so many lives being lost. But my hope is that these lives won't be lost in vain, that we'll get through this, we'll learn from it. somewhere down the line, we'll grow from it and be kinder to each other. Though I know that's going to be a challenge with all of the the craziness and the climate that's going on. But I think we were overdue for it, you know, and hopefully it'll give us a chance to reflect and decide what and who we want to be going forward.
I think that what hits me is whether it was John Lewis or John Thompson or Casey Jones or sadly Steve's mom or my first cousin or Joe Morgan who died. People who died during the pandemic did not get a proper burial. I think that's what really I have to take from it, that that their loved ones didn't get to send them off in a proper manner. And that's my sadness when I think of anyone who has died since late February of this year. They didn't get the proper, respectful, conventional funeral. We lost so many people, and it doesn't have to be Casey Jones or John Thompson, people who weren't known, who were not public figures, whose families have had to grieve within themselves and within a very small unit. And that's what I take in these last 10 months that is a real downer to me.
What about you, Jamal?
I mean, kind of along those same lines, to me, it was a sad year. 2020 was a sad year. Obviously with coronavirus, people passing. But then also, you know, Black people in general, you know, we knew what the situation was. We knew how we were treated. We knew things never, you know, weren't really getting better, but things hit the fan this year in such a way to make you really, really look around and say, you know, just be disappointed in America again, you know, and profoundly, and, you know, stuff like just the fact that Donald Trump was in office was an affront to Black people.
You know, some Black people.
Black people I know,
most,
you know, you know, but, right. You know, starting with that really. And then, right. You know, all the people murdered by police, you know, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, you know, Arbery, and there's so many more. Even the fact that we were seemed to be awakened by it, with, you know, including sports figures, you know, taking a stand and speaking out, but just the fact that had to happen, and even being unsure of what difference it's going to make, you know, I just feel like it was an overall sad year that will take, you know, more than a year to get over. So, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, at least it's 2021. I don't know what that means, you know?
Right. Well, I think, I mean, the big for me is so much, man. I was just kind of looking at your list, Jamal, and trying to chronicle it. Remember, you know, if we look back to the Super Bowl, we look for 2020, okay? Kobe Bryant tragically dies in, I guess it's like maybe the very end of January, first part of February. And we're like, I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, it's unbelievable. Then you go to the Super Bowl. You know, and that whole year, you had the year of the Black quarterback. You had people like Mahomes and DeSean Jackson and, you know, all these guys just doing so well. And then you had Mahomes, you know, winning the Super Bowl. So kind of everything was kind of like at an up. You know, I was at the Super Bowl like February 1st. So, you know, we didn't even hear of a corona. If we did, it was kind of something that happened over there. You know, we as in the United States, if it's not happening in our backyard, then it ain't really happening, you know. And then before we knew it, man, everybody's anticipating March Madness, right? We all getting ready to March Madness. Then next thing we know, I'm in Kansas City at the tournament, and the commissioner says, wow, the NBA has just shut down the season. And I'm like, what? Unheard of. You got to be joking. And that was it, man. That was on. And then you had, in the midst of all that, George Floyd. You know, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery. I mean, it was just it's worse and worse and worse. you know, no sports, no music. I mean, no, nothing. And, you know, the judge, I mean, you know, you were right. You couldn't get any, there's no law being done, right? Because the courts were closed, right? You know?
Right.
Just right. Like you were saying, man, it was just so unprecedented. And to be honest with you, we didn't really admit, you guys could talk, we didn't really begin to see, and this clown in the White House, not beyond being a clown, was tapping into some of the darkest elements, darkest racist elements of our society. Let me ask you guys something before I go on. Everybody says that this was the most divisive year in our country. But I think we've always been divided in this country. I don't think it just started. It seemed like we've always been divided, but for some reason, this all may begin with Obama and this clown in the White House basically ripped off the scab.
Right. It was always there, but I think it was when this year became, it reached the surface to where people weren't, you know, people not trying to hide it. Like you right. said, you basically had, not even basically, you had a white, like a pro-white supremacist right. in the White House. You had people working for him that are white supremacists, you know, writing his speeches. Right. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was just on the surface now, where it never was before, or we knew it was there, and we knew politicians were known, you know, were smart enough, you know, for their own careers. They were smart enough to you know, keep it as a dog whistle. But this year was no longer a dog whistle. It was just you know, shouting.
Well, I think it was, I think to piggyback on what my man Jamal is saying, I think it was clear, blatant, purposeful, willful exploitation. That's what it was. There was no hiding. There was no reading between the lines. I think, sadly, there were, this administration was trying to exploit the issue. And I think for those of us who are public servants, it makes our jobs more difficult. Even for those who normally would support his beliefs, you cannot function when people do not have confidence in their government. And we saw this for those people who were Republicans who were running the elections in the various states, who were trying to run a fair election in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, even they, who were on the same political page as the administration, couldn't effectively carry out their duties because of the willful exploitation of the issue of race that was being carried out by this administration and its allies. But I want to say something that I will take to my grave, and that is that Joe Biden would not be president had it not been for a black man. Had it not been for Congressman Jim Clyburn, he would not be president today. Right. I think we can take that to our graves, that the turnaround was started by the Democrats in South Carolina, led by Congressman Clyburn, that had they not carried the day for him, for Joe Biden in that primary, that today Donald Trump would be president. And that is a highlight of the year for me, that probably the most critical election in our lifetimes was changed and won because of the efforts of African Americans.
Doubt about that.
And it's interesting that during his post-election speech, Biden famously said, acknowledged black folks, right. And said, "And I got your back." Now, I have never heard that. I mean, seriously,
as long as I've been aware of presidents, I guess maybe beginning with Eisenhower, I've never heard any president say, thank you, black people. It's like amazing. I just don't know now how that translates into thinking it. But I'm with you too that, and I want to ask you, Steve, what about your most significant sports moment, but to me, the optimism began with the election, because I remember I was teasing you guys whenever we talked, because I was on my way to the border before the election. Mm-hmm. Because I did not have faith in my fellow United States citizens, particularly my white brothers and sisters, to go in that booth and say, you know what, you know, and say, I know I've got privilege. I know, you know, whiteness matters and all that, but I know this guy is for white people, but I can't do it, and pull the lever for Biden. Right. I thought that a lot of them were going to say, you know what? What's wrong with privilege? You know, I want my kid to get into the best school. I want my kids to get, you know, I'm not for all this stuff, and thought they pulled the other lever. So, but I was happily surprised when, 80 million, you know, 80 million, you know, said, no, we ain't down with this.
Oh, those were fraudulent votes, though, Bill.
Yeah, not 80 million. It's like, you know, it's like in our world of sports and play, how often have we watched the game? Like, remember when the San Diego Chargers used to be scoring 50, 45 points. But the problem was the people they played against was scoring 60.
Right,
you know,
right.
And you couldn't say that. You scored 45 points. We wasn't, no, motherfucker, because the damn New England Patriots scored 75. You got to work on your defense. You know?
That's right.
Right.
But Steve, right. What was, when you just look at the sports calendar, what was the most significant event for you from February to now on the sports calendar?
Wow, man, that's a tough one. I'd have to say Mahomes winning the Super Bowl. And basically because, I mean, he is arguably the most talented quarterback that we have seen. I mean, just to think about it, what is he, 24 years old? Yeah. 24 years old right now. I mean, so in the music world, in the arts world, he would be called a prodigy. Hmm. And we don't, that's a generational kind of talent. And we don't see that coming along that often. And of course, now, and then I think also to put it in context, the passing of the torch from Brady to Mahomes and this generation of quarterbacks. I mean, and of course, we've talked about Jackson and you know, Deshaun and some of the others, Watson and Jackson and some of the others that are coming along. But Mahomes, man, talent-wise, and not just talent-wise, but I mean in terms of having a football IQ, an aptitude, I mean, some might compare him already to, you know, the Michael Jordan of football. I mean, I think it's too soon to maybe put that label on him, but he certainly has that potential. I think I've loved football ever since I was a kid, you know, and watch all of these great players and quarterbacks evolve, and certainly the evolution of the black quarterback. And I think from a black quarterback perspective, he fulfills all of the promise that we've thought about since, you know, Marlon Briscoe, who was denied the opportunity. And, of course, those who came after Briscoe, James Harris and Doug Williams and all that. But he fulfills all of that promise. And he's taken the game to another level. His athleticism, his intellect, and just his intuition, man. We've never seen anything like this. Right. I mean, he's not supposed to make some of those plays that he's making. No one is.
Right.
So I think seeing that in real time, you know, I can imagine what it must have been like to see Charlie Parker, you know, or John Coltrane.
Yeah, right.
You know, because I missed them. You know, they were before my time, and of course, I get the greatness from the recordings. But you know, it's very, when you see that kind of greatness in real time, man. You know, and you think about all of the other quarterbacks, all of the Hall of Fame quarterbacks. You know, Brady, Dan Marino, Staubach, all of them, everybody, all of the great ones. And but I can't think of any QB in history that has encompassed the kind of talent we're seeing from him.
it's interesting. You mentioned Brady passing the torch to Mahomes, but I'm thinking, well, Brady may come back and snatch it back because this cat, man, you know, down there at Tampa. And I was just thinking as a journalist, what a great story would be somehow this cat, you know, leads Tampa back to the NFC title game. They play Green Bay or Russell Wilson, Seattle, and somehow wins. And then Kansas City, you know, somehow, you know, well, not somehow, gets AFC title game. And, you know, I guess though, relative to what you were saying, I would love to see Russell Wilson maybe face Mahomes, because I think that might be a very serious passion of the torch. And Wilson, to me, is a guy, you know, we always say people getting their due. I mean, what does that mean, you know? Mm. But, you know, I don't know if Charlie Parker got his due while he was living, you know. I think his musicians knew that he was otherworldly. But remember, he was a black man in a racist white society who didn't give black people, men, credit for possibly being innovators who changed the course of music. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know what getting to do, but I don't think that Russell Wilson has really gotten his due as being maybe like one of the most consistent great scorers. So I don't know what you guys think, it would be great for me to see Seattle facing Kansas City in the Super Bowl.
And I love that. I'd love to see that.
I was always concerned about the Seattle team when they blew that goal line stand against the Patriots.
Yeah.
I always thought there was something behind the story that they didn't hand it off. They had a timeout.
Yep.
and they had
beast mode.
The beast mode. Yeah. All they had to do was give him the ball. Even if they handed it to him the first time it got stopped, they still had a timeout to regroup and run at least one more play. And for some reason, they went away from the beast mode and did an unbelievable thing of passing into the center of the line on the 1 or 2 yard line.
Right. Yeah.
And I've never been able to really feel great about Seattle after that. Although Russell Wilson has always carried himself so well, comes from a very outstanding Southern black family. And I'm always happy for him, but I always felt that that Seattle team, for some reason, which I will never know, you might know, Bill, or Jamal might know, being you guys are in the media, but they never carried out and won that game that they should have easily won.
Right.
Well, that kind of game, I was at the Super Bowl that I left early, and I was driving. You know, I'm driving up the highway from Arizona headed to California, and I'm listening to the game, and I'm so excited. Because remember, Wilson made that miraculous throw, that got him down to the 1 yard line. And I'm thinking, here we go. Because to me, they just won the Super Bowl. He wins another one. Now he's automatically in elite territory. So I'm thinking, this is it. And when they had beast mode, like you said, and when they threw that, I damn near drove off the side of the road. I did pull over. And I was like, I just, for about 3 minutes, I said, what? And, you know, beast mode hinted. See, that's the stuff for me that gives you, I'm thinking organized crime. I'm thinking fixes. I'm thinking, you know, even beast mode, I go right to the dark side. Because, you know, I go right to the dark side. So this shit was fixed, man. You know, and because I'm thinking, but who did
I'm it? Thinking professional jealousy, and Bill's thinking organized crime.
Yeah, because I'm always thinking, man, there's too much money in this shit for shit not to be. Because remember, the boy Donahue, NBA official. NBA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who was saying that? And they like shut him down real quick,
right,
you know?
Right.
And said, oh, he was a lone wolf. There's no such thing as lone wolves, you know? And And then Beast Mode said he thought it was more like it's using professional jealousy, like they didn't want him to be the MVP. Because remember, right. he was like really anti-establishment.
Right.
And they said, no, we ain't gonna let this cat be the MVP of the league. So from on high was the owner or somebody, they said, no, we can live with Russell Wilson being the MVP. But I was you, man. I was like, but I look at it, I said, I would love to have him go back, to go right. back. And because if we feel that way, you know he's been having nightmares.
Right. And that's you hit it on the head in terms of that's what he's missing. That's why he doesn't get his due because of that. Really, you know, if he would have got that second ring, that changes everything. You can't even deny him.
Right.
He's a great player. He's put up great numbers, but he's, you know, there is a little something missing right. sometimes, and it could be, you know, he just hasn't had the team. But even this year and in past years, you know, he'll go on a nice 4 or 5 week run and look like the best in the league, and then come back down to earth for about 4 or 5 weeks, and then, you know, maybe make a run in the playoffs or not, you know. Where, and it's, you know, so to Steve's point about Mahomes, and, you know, I'm reluctant to, you know, to put him on the pedestal that you know, he's already the best ever. You know, I am, but to be honest, when you watch him play, you never really have seen a young guy like that perform at this level to the point where you know he's going to get it done. Like, if he, you know, it doesn't, you know, the team may be favored to win by 14 a lot of weeks. They win by 3. And it's always him, you know, bringing him down the field, you know, on that last drive to either get the field goal or the touchdown to squeak out the victory. And it could be in the regular season. It could be in the playoffs. Like I haven't even seen it yet, but it'd be shocking to see him not get it done, you know, at this young age. And so, to me, he almost has like some Montana in him,
right?
You know, like, but an athletic version of Joe Montana. So, mm-hmm. it's hard to go against Mahomes.
Yeah. Let me ask you.
He's got a long way to go.
He does, but I think it's only injury. I think can stop him.
Yeah.
Well, when you look at the playoffs, I mean, I don't know. Again, how you guys feel? I feel so. You know, as much as I used to rail against fans, and fans are looking for escape. You know, pre-pandemic. You know, that's what's wrong with fans. They're looking for escape, and they don't want to see protests in the field. But because it's pandemic, man, I found myself looking for escape. You know, like if they have football every day of the week, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm watching. You know, I watch every single baseball playoff game. You know,
wow.
and to some extent, I said, well, maybe I'm getting a new appreciation. Although it was escape, I'm getting a new appreciation for being a fan, because I had really been a fan since I was 16. You know, I really became this sort of, you know, quote unquote journalist. And I'm at the press box up high, looking down and, you know, not really looking at fans with some degree of disdain. You know, how can y'all really be taking this shit seriously? I mean, you know, kind of thing. But now I'm like, yeah, I kind of get it. so I made an adjustment, even though I think the morality, I mean, of playing football in the midst of a pandemic is just horrendous. I mean, it's just awful, really. You know, you're just being saying, hey, man, we don't care. We're going to go to the finish line with whoever's left.
Now, I wanted to ask all of you, I mean, what's your thought about, you know, across all the professional sports since COVID has come in, and they've gone on with their seasons as however they might, you know, and we're looking at the championships, whether it's, you know, we have the NCAA football championship coming up, of course, and, you know, then the World Series and all. I mean, so what do you think about the championships in the context of COVID?
As I said to Bill and Jamal the last time I was on, I don't think they should be playing sports during the COVID. I really don't. But as soon as we finish here, I'm going to be turning on the TV to catch the NBA games tonight.
Right.
And during the summer, when I was only working part-time, when we were only allowed in the courthouse for an hour or two a week for a hearing or two, I was rushing home in the middle of the day to watch the NBA from the bubble. And on Saturday afternoons, there is no way that they should be playing college football. There is just no way. But I've been watching Ohio State and Justin Fields every week. And every week that they play anyway. And I've been watching all the various games. I saw they had a big brawl today. Mississippi State and Tulsa had a terrible fight on the field. They're just my point is it's a great paradox for me that there is no way that these sports should be playing, especially when the colleges can't even have the kids on campus. But the players are playing. They are essential workers then who should be compensated as such. I guess that's my response to you, Steve, is that I do not feel that any of these sports should be playing. I think we're fortunate that no young man or woman has perished so far that we know of by contracting the coronavirus while playing sports. But having said that, I'm watching them every day. Right. That's my form of entertainment.
I feel the exact same way. I've expressed the same sentiment. One of the big things that, this year showed me was how important sports are to this country. I mean, is there, I'm not sure if there's anything more important. I'm not like, what else would still go on where you're putting people at risk, you know, just from being together? Like, what else makes that much money? You know, TV shows, they shut down. Like they stopped taping new TV shows and movies and all that kind of stuff. But sports went on. Obviously it's about the money. In the professional leagues, I can accept it a little more because the players want to play also because they need to make that money. So they're making, you know, risk reward type of decision. They know they're not going to make that kind of money any other way. So they're willing to play. It's the college stuff, which I still watch also.
I don't watch that. I can't, up to this point, I may peak at Alabama, but I just feel like you were saying, Jamal, at the college, at the pro level, they're getting paid. So they can make a decision, but all of them are being held hostage. LeBron, all of them being held hostage. Cause it's not like us, you know, I could work from home, you know, I ain't got to go into this stuff. But if you're an athlete, and that's how you're making your money, right? That's how you're making your money. And a lot of the stuff you buy and purchases, your homes and all that stuff is based on you getting that check.
Right.
You're basically held hostage to this stuff. So you got to go into that virus.
And I said this at the very beginning of the pandemic, a couple of things. One, that they were going to be considered essential employees.
Yeah.
All of these athletes, essential to the rest of us, you know, and to people that make money off of them. They are essential employees. And then the other thing was the college situation, which I was saying a while back, and people were laughing when I asked, you know, would there be a situation where colleges would bring kids back just as a front to allow them to play college sports. And that's basically what has happened. And now they forget the front. It's like, you know, 2020, everything has come to the surface.
Right.
Okay. We can't hide it anymore. Right. We have no kids on campus, but we're still going to have the only kids on campus are the athletes and they're going to play and we're going to make money off them. Now the kids have to get paid soon, right? Is this going to happen?
No.
Let me ask you this. Will college athletes be paid in the next 18 months?
No, I still don't think so. I mean, I still believe in a way, man. I don't know what you guys feel. I don't think they should. I think particularly as a black community, man, we need to value education more. Now, what I think they could not easily do is for those schools that are making money, the schools that we're going to be watching tomorrow, you know, those Power Five schools. I think that they could organize a trust so that if you're at Alabama, Clemson, those kinds of schools, and you guys get to bowl games and all that, yes, I think that they could devise trust for players, whether you're the first string or 50th string, you get a percentage that is agreed upon by somebody, a percentage of that thing. So by the end of your 4 years or whatever, you've got this money in the bank. I think the only thing that you have to determine is, do you have to graduate to get it, or as soon as you leave to go to the pros or whatever, you get it then. But
you got to get a lifelong scholarship, period.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if you participate, there should be a point at which, if you've participated in intercollegiate sports on a team, that you should be guaranteed a lifelong scholarship. There are too many young women and men who spent a long time in a program, didn't and used all their eligibility, but didn't get a degree. And when their eligibility expired, they were told they had to pay right. their way to complete the education.
Right.
I think if you, I think at certain levels, it can be worked out. We've managed to work out pay routines and schedules for every job in America.
Right.
And as someone who represented citizens of the state of Connecticut when I was assistant attorney general, making certain that everyone got paid pursuant to the Connecticut law for the hours that they worked, we've been able to work out pay schedules for every job in America.
Right.
I think we can figure out a way to pay for these young people to be paid if they perform a certain amount of time at a certain level in college sports. I can speak for one case that I know specifically of a well-known athlete, retired now, who left early to make his fortune in pro sports, who left primarily because he got tired of being the top player on his college team and seeing his coach making millions of dollars a year.
Right, his white coach
probably. It was an incentive to him to leave early and go to play pro sports. And as long as these coaches are making the money that they make off of the labor and sweat of these kids, I think, like Jamal said, number one, they should be guaranteed an education after participating in a certain number of games for life,
right.
Number one. And number two, depending on their level of participation and what role they have, they should be compensated for it. But interestingly enough, going back to Coach Thompson, he has a chapter in his book where he says a player should be paid. But he interestingly says, what happens if a guy doesn't work out and does not continue to be an asset to the team? He said, do I have the opportunity now to fire him?
Right.
You know, right. Only like Big John would do, always bring up the complex side of it.
Right, and they do fire him, but they don't call it firing. They just call it running him off.
Right.
Right.
Bye-bye to your scholarship.
I think those things can be worked out. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this, in the couple minutes we have left, you know, we've been looking back a lot. You know, let's look forward. You know, what would each of you like to see in 2021? I mean, like, I agree with you, Jamal, like, there's no magic wand. And just because we're in 2021, all of a sudden, this is like a bad dream and you wake up. It's kind of like, the best thing about it is that this clown won't be in the White House much longer. So I said, let's walk him out. Right. Don't say, which way is the White House? That one? No, walk his ass out.
Oh, you're going to need
Yeah, show him the exit and then walk him all the way to the gate and then walk him beyond that just to make sure, and then lock it. Don't show him the directions. Walk him all the
blindfold
way out. Yeah, right. Blindfold so you can't. But what would you guys like to see? Start with you, Glenn. What would each of you like to see in 2021?
I'll tell you what hit me during the late summer and fall was the extreme, and I say this in the most positive manner, extreme activism of the players in the NBA and the NFL as far as encouraging people to vote. Yes, and I think we all knew what that meant when they said vote.
Right.
And then also getting these buildings open for people registering to vote. I was in a positive way stunned by the actions of these kids. And so it really made me feel good to see the activism, the energy, these kids really putting their careers on the line in some cases to push, promote, encourage, cajole people to vote. And when these kids were, these pro athletes were doing this, that hit home, I'm sure, with a lot of people who were not planning on voting or weren't giving it any thought. So I look forward in the coming months and years for these kids to stay active. I'm one last thing. Kyrie Irving catches a lot of hell for being a bit unique, if you will. But I can say that I remember reading where he paid Renee Montgomery's salary so that she would be able to take part in social activism and not have to play this past season for the WNBA. So that's what I look forward to, is this very reasonable activism by these young people. I was really thrilled by that.
Yeah, I hear you. What about you, Steve?
Yeah, you know, I have to piggyback on that point too. I think now that athletes, and particularly Black and minority athletes, understand the power that they have, they need to translate that into more action. And I mean that at the college level and the pro level. The college students now understand, I think, a little better how the system works. I'd like to see them more active. I mean, I'm thinking of the instance, you know, during the Black Lives Matter and George Floyd and all of that, and how I think more than a few college coaches had their come to Jesus moment. But they need to seize on that and take it to the next level and make demands to have more rights on their campuses, to have more representation, to have more say in the matters of their future and those of their fellow students. And the community in which they are going to school also. But also to the professional athletes, I like to see them, and I've been saying this for years, pick up where, you know, you had the consortium of Jim Brown and you know, that famous meeting, you know, with Kareem.
Right.
And I know a lot of them have been doing that, but to invest in the community, because it all comes down to one thing. No matter who the president is, and no matter which party has the majority in which House of Congress or the Senate, we cannot depend on that,
right,
you know, in terms of finding the answers for our communities. So those that have the resources, and particularly the athletes and entertainers, but, you know, those who have the money, put that together, you know, and invest in the community. And we know that there have been many examples of that, you know, LeBron James and many others. So, but we need that to happen on a bigger scale. And so we need to pick up this momentum of what we've come through in 2020 with this woke period, this wokeness, and it's got to translate into some things of substance.
Right.
Yeah. What do you think, Jamal?
I mean, I'm going to piggyback off of it also. I just, you know, what was started in 2020 with the athlete activism, it just needs to continue. You know, they can't let up. They were able to make some ground. It wasn't easy. Remember, all that effort they put into it, and we barely got Trump out of office. Okay.
Right.
So, and remember what happened with Obama, when we got Obama in office for 8 years, and as soon as he left, what happened that next year? participation fell off, people got comfortable, and it resulted in Trump. So I think you have to guard against that forever. I mean, you know, it's hard work forever. And like Bill, you always say, pass the baton. You know, you got to pass the baton and you got to run even harder than the last person was running. So we got to continue that. And for the college athletes, you know, we haven't really seen that on the college level yet. We haven't seen them mobilize to the extent I would like to see at this point when, you know, we were talking about, you know, they're being thrown into the fire in this COVID situation worse than anybody. There was an article, I think a couple of days ago that said Ohio State, just Ohio State, 30% of the athletes that tested positive for COVID, which was a bunch of Ohio State athletes over the summer and during the year, 30% of those guys now have myocarditis. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wow.
So, I mean, 30%. I mean, that's a lot. And if it's like that at Ohio State, it's like that everywhere. We saw Keontae Johnson collapse on the court at Florida. So, you know, college athletes really, you know, a lot has to be done there. And I think, you know, I think the actions of the professional athletes will filter down. So I think that's a good thing. But it needs to continue.
And I guess everything you guys said, I second, because we're talking about power and control. You know, just focus on power and control and numbers. You know, when the Milwaukee Bucks said, we ain't playing, I think it was an epiphany for a lot of people. The networks, everybody said, shit, these guys ain't playing. Ain't no show. Mm-hmm. Ain't no show. You know, they realized, and I think if 15 guys realized, man, there ain't no show, you know. It was the Dallas Cowboys, the Clemson Tigers, or whatever. They said, you know what, man? If we don't play, there ain't no show. Mm-hmm. But then you have to say, okay, then what? Okay, what's the plan after that? And I think that's, you know, like I forget who said it, but, you know, the struggle never ends, you know, whether it's like, you know, you find yourself in Jamestown in 1609, and it's okay, what's the plan, you know? 1709 was the play, 18, you know, in every single century, our thing as a group of black folks have been looking for what's the plan? How do we continue to push forward? But the beauty is that we've always pushed forward, even when you on paper, we had no reason. You know, on paper, we could have been at any given thing, you know, remember, imagine what it'd be like. We complain about the clown in the White House, but remember, for our grandfather, great-great-grandfather, they always had a clown like that in the White House. But for some reason, there was this, I don't know if you call it optimism or faith or inherent sense of mission, whatever it was, it's whether it's passing the torch, we just kept on going forward. And I think that's what we have to do. It's like an existential race that ain't never over. Mm-hmm. We just keep going, it's never over, you know, and that's why I'm looking for in our industry. You know, the last thing I'd say too, and this goes to Steve, man, I'd love to see the music come back. Mm. You know, before we got on air, I think that one of the greatest threats to our, like a quote unquote, our, what we call democracy is the arts, you know, and the music and the creativity. And when you can shut that down, man, you really take a chunk out of who we are.
That's right.
You know, and I was thinking, that's what I really miss, man, going to Disney's or Smoke or hearing a concert and just going to hear some music, you know, or other people, same thing. Well, look at some dance, it's theater, you know. And it seems like prior to March, it was just bursting, man. And I really want to see that come back in addition to everything else. But I agree, man. I think as you, Steve, who said that as quote unquote bad as 2020, everything is a learning. Everything is an epiphany, a learning thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no negative. I mean, it is negative, but it's not negative.
Right.
So that's what I'd like to see. And I'm looking forward to seeing us four shortly in the new year, getting back on the air and, you know, like continue to grind forward. It's been great being with you guys for 2020. You know, I mean, that's really been the source of joy when all this other stuff, we get together and just like laugh at this shit.
Yeah. Zoom did well in 2020.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, no, Zoom did. I know. That's what we should invest in. Once again, missed the boat.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we didn't have the inside 411, but.
I know. Somebody. Yeah.
I mean, a couple senators did, but you know. Yeah,
right.
Well,
right.
It's like, man, you know, it's like, why always you got to get up early in the morning, man, because it's like, out of all this misery, a lot of these white cats, man, maybe some brothers, white cats emerge richer than ever with untold fortune.
Yeah.
You know? So may that be us in 2021, where we kind of get a peek at like the inside, you know, like the Marshawn Lynch insight on why,
why he didn't get the ball.
Not me. Why he didn't get the ball.
I'm good with that.
Anyway, hey man, happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year.
Same to you, Bill, everybody. Yes. Jamal, Steve. Yes.
Indeed.
Thank you.
To everyone. Thank you guys.
All right. To all our millions of viewers, thanks again for you know, sticking with us in 2020 and looking for more and better 2021. God bless everybody. See you in 2021.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.